Welcome to Voicing Our Values, a series of podcasts about progressive message framing. This is the fourth segment entitled How to Talk About Civil Rights and Liberties. I'm Bernie Horn, the Senior Director for Policy and Communications at the Public Leadership Institute, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization that seeks to help progressive lawmakers and advocates, particularly at the state and local levels of government. Please take some time to look around our website, www.publicleadershipinstitute.org. In addition to the Voicing Our Values messaging handbook, you'll find the Progressive Agenda, which contains hundreds of policy ideas and more than 150 model bills, our handbook for policy advocates called Preparing to Win, and much more. In our last podcast, number 3, we explained how to talk about economic fairness in a way to get around the problem of confirmation bias that's been explained in podcast number 1. To persuade, you need to understand your audience's preconceptions and where you share common ground. To avoid triggering negative emotional responses and confirmation bias, you must start from a point of agreement and provide voters with a bridge from their preconceptions to your solutions. Along the way, show that your policies are consistent with values that they already hold dear and explain how they benefit. All this is designed to remind your listeners over and over again that you are on their side. The question now is, how do we apply this when talking about civil rights and liberties? Civil rights ensure that people will be treated equally, regardless of their gender, race, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or any other differentiation that is irrelevant to our inherent rights as residents and citizens. Civil liberties guarantee fundamental human rights that are, or should be, protected by our Constitution. The individual circumstances that require the protection of civil rights and liberties tend to be unpopular. It's unpopular to defend the rights of criminals. It's often unpopular for a minority to play a role where that group wasn't seen before. Whenever free speech needs to be protected, it's almost certainly unpopular speech because popular speech isn't attacked. But even when causes are unpopular, we can defend popular American ideals. Let's begin with a summary and then we'll discuss timely examples. We've told you to begin any argument in agreement with your audience. But what do we mean when we're talking about civil rights and liberties? How about this? What makes America special is our commitment to freedom and justice for all. Now, who's going to disagree with that? And we've told you to use values, but what values apply to civil rights and liberties? How about freedom, liberty, fundamental rights, fundamental fairness, basic rights, constitutional rights, personal privacy, justice, equal opportunity, fairness, stopping discrimination, and stopping government intrusion? These are all values which Americans cherish. Talking about them keeps us in agreement with our audience. And what is our progressive vision for civil rights and liberties? Something like this. Our nation was founded and built upon the self-evident truth that all men and women are created equal. That ideal calls us to defend liberty and justice for all people, with no exceptions. In the 21st century, three policies are of foremost importance. The first is to outlaw discrimination based upon race, gender, age, disability, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or gender identity. The second is to guarantee fundamental fairness for immigrants and refugees seeking asylum. And the third is to protect our privacy from intrusion by governments or business, including the collection, use, and sale of data without individuals' active consent. Now, those are the generalities. Let's consider a few examples in the news. Let's talk about how we talk about immigrants and refugees. And let's begin with an important distinction. The right wing and the media confuse refugees with migrants. Now, refugees are people who are fleeing armed conflict or persecution. They have legal rights under international law. When a refugee comes to the U.S. border and seeks refuge, that is completely in accord with federal law. They have done absolutely nothing wrong, and they cannot be prosecuted for it. Immigrants, or migrants, are people who choose to move, not because of a direct threat of death or persecution in their home country, but mainly to improve their lives by finding work or reuniting their families. Migrants are subject to federal immigration law. While it's horrible to treat migrants as criminals, it's illegal to treat refugees as such. And yet the current administration seems to be treating them as interchangeable, and the media is going along with it. Don't you do that. Okay, now, let's be more general here. Polls show that there's a tremendous difference in the way Americans feel about unauthorized immigrants depending on whether or not they're perceived as criminals. 78% of Americans would, quote, deport all people currently living in the country illegally who have been convicted of other crimes while living in the United States. Additional research demonstrates that what they mean by other crimes is serious crimes. Without being prompted about criminals, 71% say, quote, we should not attempt to deport all people currently living in the country illegally. See that distinction? Three quarters would deport if they're considered criminals. Three quarters would not deport without being prompted about criminals. More specifically, if, quote, illegal immigrants have been in this country for a number of years, hold a job, speak English, and are willing to pay back taxes they owe, unquote, 90% favor allowing them to stay in the U.S., quote, and eventually allow them to apply for U.S. citizenship, unquote. So, when presented, when framed in the best way possible for our side, 90% of Americans are with us. So it's important to talk about immigrants who've been playing by the rules. For example, here's a narrative you could try. America is a nation of values, founded on the idea that all of us are created equal. We need to be true to those values and protect everyone's rights to due process and fair treatment under our Constitution. The millions of immigrants who have lived here for years, work hard, pay taxes, and play by the rules, they make our economy and our country stronger. That's why, and then you talk about the solution you advocate. Now, why do you say it that way? Right-wing advocates want to make this debate about crime. Don't help ingrain those ideas by repeating them. And don't use the word illegal, even to make the entirely truthful statement that, quote, no human is illegal. Unless you are talking about immigrants who may be criminals, e.g. In the debate about detainers, assert that you're talking about people with no criminal background. Nothing you say is going to sway the right-wing base. In a one-on-one conversation, it's futile to keep arguing with an anti-immigrant stalwart. But if persuadable voters are watching you debate the issue, you can take another step and address the real problem, and that is our immigration system is obsolete. Something like this. Our immigration system should be completely fair. It should embody justice. But due to years of gridlock in Washington, that system is a mess. It's time for the Congress to stop playing politics and create an immigration process that recognizes the value of people who've lived here for years, working hard and playing by the rules. We need a system that keeps families together, creates a roadmap for those who aspire to become citizens, and strengthens our economy for years to come. Overall, you need to move the conversation away from individual immigrants, who are stereotypically portrayed as bad people, to the real problem, which is the bad immigration process. The word choices in these short examples require a little explanation. You don't want to say illegal aliens, obviously, or illegal immigrants, or even undocumented immigrants doesn't work so well. Say new American immigrants, new Americans, or aspiring citizens. Why? You don't want to say aliens because that implies that they're different from us, which is both inaccurate and offensive. You don't want to say illegal because it suggests that they are criminals deserving a punishment, which is false. Undocumented has been pretty thoroughly tested and unfortunately does not work. If you have to be more specific, you can say immigrants who are not authorized to be here. On the positive side, new American immigrants, new Americans, and people who aspire to be citizens are poll-tested phrases, and they move the conversation in a productive direction. Americans are not inclined to, quote, give, unquote, anything to immigrants, but at the same time, they generally don't want to deny rights or necessities. So frame your arguments accordingly. For example, if you're arguing for a state DREAM Act to allow the children of new American immigrants to be eligible for in-state tuition rates, you'd say something like this. We should reward hard work and responsibility. When young, aspiring Americans graduate from a local high school after they've lived here for years and stayed out of trouble, we should not deny them access to college tuition rates that are available to their graduating classmates. Education is the cornerstone of our democracy and our economy, so when we enable young people to go to college, we all reap the benefits. Or, alternatively, let's say you're arguing to allow immigrants access to driver's licenses. Something like this. The laws about driving on our highways should be designed to make us all safer. So it doesn't make sense to deny new American immigrants the ability to get a driver's license. We should want them licensed to ensure that every driver on the road is trained, tested, and covered by insurance. It's a policy that benefits all of us. Now let's turn to a different subject on civil rights and liberties, and that's LGBT rights. Most Americans don't understand the inequalities faced by LGBT people and how those inequalities affect their lives. Regardless, in just the past few years, Americans have moved rapidly to accept marriage equality and reject discrimination against gay and transgender people. For example, as recently as 2011, a majority of Americans opposed marriage between same-sex couples, and it was still a fairly effective wedge issue for conservatives as recently as 2009. Today, Americans support marriage equality by a margin of 2-1. By an even stronger margin, Americans support LGBT anti-discrimination laws. 70% favor and only 26% oppose, quote, laws that would protect gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people against discrimination in jobs, public accommodations, and housing, unquote. Even Republicans support such laws by a margin of 60-33. We can continue this heartening trend by pointing out that, when it comes to what's important about being an American, LGBT people have the same values as everyone else. Something like this. This is about everyday Americans who want the same chance as everyone else to pursue their health and happiness, earn a living, be safe in their communities, and take care of the ones they love. So, in general, you want to say that all of us want the same things in life, and we should all be treated fairly and equally. That's the point. So you don't want to say things about protecting or granting rights, or protecting or granting benefits, or even civil rights, what you want to say is you're talking about fairness and equality, you're talking about equal opportunity, you're talking about removing unfair barriers. Now, why is that? Talking about rights, benefits, or what LGBT people deserve does not help persuadable voters understand the issues, and it tends to sound like you want something different or special for LGBT people. Also, civil rights comparisons can alienate some African Americans. Use language that's inclusive, language that shows unfair barriers prevent LGBT people from doing things that we hold dear or even take for granted, like fulfilling obligations to their loved ones, their families, their friends, their neighbors, their community, and their country. Use examples that help Americans acknowledge LGBT people as average, hardworking Americans who deserve to be treated as such. When you are advocating for anti-discrimination statutes, it's essential to understand that Americans are not aware that LGBT people can lose their jobs or be denied housing simply because of who they are. You must tell them. So here's an example. All hardworking people in our community should have the chance to earn a living, provide for themselves and their families, and live like everyone else. But in our city or state, it's currently legal to fire employees or refuse to rent an apartment to people just because they are gay or transgender. Nobody should have to live in fear that they can be fired or evicted just because of who they are. Now, why talk that way? Most states do not have anti-discrimination laws to protect gay people, and fewer still cover transgender people. In states that don't provide protection, it's usually possible for cities and counties to enact their own local laws, and many have done so already. So you don't want to say employment or housing rights or discrimination. What you want to say is employment or housing protections, treating people fairly and equally, equal opportunity. Let me explain that. Avoid talking about giving or granting any rights, which implies special treatment. Instead, say that we should not deny protections, which implies that rights are inherent to everyone. Obviously, we oppose discrimination, but that language can lead to a polarized debate, so it's better to talk about treating people fairly or protecting equal opportunity. Finally, we may be sorely tempted to take some swings at our political opponents to brand them negatively. But it's better to let them negatively brand themselves. And here are some examples. Don't say hate or haters or hatred or bigots or bigotry or prejudice or religious extremists or anti-gay Christians. What you want to say is love, standing for love, exclusion, rejection, and intolerance, anti-gay activists or the radical right activists. Why? When we make it clear that we're on the side of love, our opponents are against love. This implication is enough. It's not useful to employ emotionally charged words like haters or bigots, no matter how tempting or true it might be. And we certainly don't want to use language that seems to imply an entire religious tradition or denomination is anti-gay. You can say, "This is the kind of exclusion and intolerance that divides our community." Or you can say, "The hurtful rhetoric of anti-gay activists." But generally, stick to the positive and your audience will understand that you believe everyone deserves the same chance at happiness and stability, while our opponents simply do not. Here's another example. If America stands for anything, it's equal opportunity for all. If you have two children or grandchildren, and one is straight and the other gay, you love them equally. You know that government should treat them fairly and equally. And that is why, and that's where you explain your policy solution. Let's talk about one other area under civil rights and liberties, religious liberties. And let's use the Ten Commandments as an example. Hopefully you won't have to debate a proposal to display the Ten Commandments in government buildings, but you might And we use it here to represent issues where religious advocates seek to impose their religion on others and to understand the difficulty of the progressive position. It's important to realize that Americans favor posting the Ten Commandments in government buildings by a margin of more than 3-1. So, if you're in that position, here's a narrative. The Ten Commandments are a moral inspiration, and I applaud churches and synagogues that post and teach them. Another inspiration is the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, because it guarantees our most important freedoms. Our country's based on freedom. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have fought and died for our freedom. The First Amendment guarantees the right to display the Ten Commandments everywhere except government property, where it's prohibited. To maintain our freedom, this is the rule that we must follow. So why do I say that? Freedom is the most powerful word in the American political lexicon. Conservatives understand this and use it in inappropriate situations again and again. So when progressives have the opportunity to defend freedom, we must do it explicitly and enthusiastically. In future podcasts, we'll show how to use our 5 basic rules of persuasion to debate many other issues. In the meantime, do us a favor and recommend the Voicing Our Values series of podcasts to your friends. Best to you!